Dave and Marianne, there is a rich history of UFO cases involving police, police witnesses, police pursuit. I'm sure you've looked at a bunch of them. You've got some of them on your website of UAPPD. The one I had mentioned earlier, based on the Steven Spielberg scene, 1966, April, the police started chasing these objects at 100 miles per hour. It stretched from Ohio into Pennsylvania. Pretty famous case. You ever looked at that one, Marianne?
That one we haven't. We definitely need to look into that historical case. We have a couple of them. The one that we talk about during our presentations, it's a very long one, but it was brought to my attention by Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds and also the late, great Lee Spiegel, but it's the Lumberton, North Carolina case.
Sure. Tell us about
where, you know, 19, what was it? In Lumberton was 1975 when there was, I believe it was, I think, 27 officers in 11 cities, four or six counties over a four-night span of people just chasing this triangular craft over all of these cities and everybody chasing it. And, of course, Lee Spiegel was also basically came face-to-face with the craft. He was right underneath it, and they have that painting portraying him underneath the craft. I'm going to definitely look into that 1966 case. That is definitely a interesting case. One of the, a good friend of ours, David Marler, who is the executive director of the National UFO Historical Records Center, has shared a lot of historical cases with us, and that's definitely one that I'm going to talk to him about, and we would love to get that case and put it in our files.
Well, I think he's got it because he has a lot of J.L. and Hynek stuff from the Hynek's UFO organization, and that was a Hynek case that ended up in Spielberg's movie. I know you've got one, a Royal Canadian Mounty Police from 1978, a case of that that's on your website. Dave, you want to give us a synopsis of that one if you know it?
Yeah, the Clarendon case.
Yeah.
That was Blackwood. Blackwood was the Mountie. He ended up receiving a call for a disturbance, ends up responding out to the bay that's right there in Clarendon. It's in Nova Scotia. As he pulls up, he sees this cylindrical craft that's hovering, I want to say it was about 500 feet above the water. And interesting thing is he pulls up, there's already like a dozen witnesses that are on the shore all looking at this craft out hovering over the water. And it's there for, I want to say it was like about an hour, where he was actually watching this craft long enough for him to go get not a binocular, but like a spyglass where he could, a telescope where he could see it better. He described it as having lights on the underside of it. One of the interesting things, and I'm a big fan of, when I started this whole thing, I was very skeptical. So I'm a big fan of interactions with the things. If you see a craft, and I mean, it's one thing to see a light in the sky. It's another thing if you do something and it reacts. And the reason I bring that up is because the Mountie that was involved in this case, Blackwood, he ends up turning on the headlights of his car and turning them off, and the craft over in the water ends up mimicking the same action of turning the lights on, turning lights off, turning lights on, turning lights off. So to me, that is a big point of a lot of the investigations, because as a trained investigator, we're looking for those things that show some sort of intelligence behind it, or some sort of it's not just a fluke. It's not ball lightning. It's something that is showing signs of intelligence, that it's interacting. Anyways, he watches it for a while, and then it kind of like slowly drifts up and then kind of flies off into the sky and is gone. Interesting little side note about that case is they end up doing a full investigation. They ended up, the government ended up saying that they thought that it was Jupiter. Last time I checked, I didn't think Jupiter was hovering over a bay in Nova Scotia, and it didn't have lights that would flash on and off if you shine them at them. But the interesting thing as far as police work goes, a lot of times when these officers will see things, nobody ever talks about, you know, what happens after. Like, it's always, oh, this officer, like Lonnie Zamora, sees a sighting. Vail Johnson sees the sighting. Everybody talks about the officer seeing the sighting. Nobody ever follows up with what happened to the officer afterwards. This case, when I was looking into that, was the first time I actually saw somebody who actually went after the officer to find out, like, hey, what happened after? And when he was forced to talk to the media by his superiors, which is unusual to begin with, but then his quote, when he was asked about it, he said, it was the worst thing I ever did. His career basically spiraled and went downhill right from there. So it's one of those things that it kind of feeds into our whole concept of these stigmas that officers and firefighters and first responders are facing, where there is like a fallout or a cost for being too honest with what you see.
It's true. Lonnie Zamora, that case is one of the top 10 of all time in the history of the UFO topic.
Absolutely.
It's critical. I mean, he saw something land there, you know, and mm-hmm. it left physical evidence. But it was took a terrible toll on him and his family and his career. And, mm-hmm. you know, we had a case here in Las Vegas. I'm sure you read about it a year, 15 months ago. There was a meteor that passed over Las Vegas, and it was caught on a police body cam. And, you know, the word about this thing passes very quickly. Because on that same night, Las Vegas Metro Police get a call from this family, frightened out of their wits, saying that there are aliens in the backyard, that they'd seen this thing go over, it landed in their backyard, and then they saw 10-foot-tall aliens jumping around on their heavy equipment. And we covered it. We covered it primarily because the police officers took it seriously. They went to the house, they checked it out. They were obviously there was some tension involved. They were looking around. Police then they followed it up. Some sergeants came back to the house the next day. They put another surveillance camera up on the roof to see if anything came back or if the family was being messed with by people who were playing tricks on them or trying to scare them. I mean, the family took it very seriously. They reached out to us, the news organization, KLAS, and they said they wanted to speak to me. My colleague, David Charnes, part of the I-team, he is the guy who requested the police video. It took some days to get it. I spoke to the family member who had been the most vocal member who shared the story with us. He agreed. He asked for me to come out and interview him. And so we're talking to police, taking it seriously. Three different times I had arranged to see this family, and all three times they blew me off, wouldn't answer the door. So we got kind of frustrated with it. We did some reports on it. Right now, you will see on social media every day UFO people beating me over the head because I'm not reporting on it, not realizing that the reason they know about it is we did report on it a year and a half or 15 months ago. And the police officers involved got a lot of grief about it. I think that probably if they had had it to do over again, they might not talk about it at all. They get pummeled, the Metro, for being part of the big government cover-up, the Men in Black came there and told them to shut up and, you know, all gets garbled. And then, you know, here it is 15 months later and we, the news organization that broke it, get beat up for not covering it when in fact we did. And, you know, the story that the family told didn't check out. There were inconsistencies and things that they told us that were not true. So we moved on from it. And I know that there's a lot of interest in that case. I don't know. Have either of you looked at it?
Yeah, actually, we both have reached out. We actually have some friends that were on Las Vegas Metro, and we reached out to them about it. It was a number of months ago that we reached out to them on it, and we had very similar results to what you had, where they were basically told, hey, we're not allowed to talk about this. We're not allowed to talk about this stuff anymore. And that's a recurring theme that happens quite often and whenever you get a first responder that sees something exactly like what you had there, George. The initial reaction when the officer sees it is, oh, I need to tell somebody about it. I need to tell somebody I trust. And then after they think about it a little while, maybe they got a phone call to go upstairs like I did, or maybe it was just them thinking about it and realizing, yeah, maybe I shouldn't say anything about it. But when we looked into it, what we could look into it, like I should say, is we ran into the same type of roadblock where even we were getting officers that were like, oh, yeah, we can't really talk about that sort of thing.
Yeah, they've been saying that the command staff basically told them, don't talk about it. It's over. It's done with. Move on, basically. I did, on social media, all the body cam footage, is out there. I did get copies of that. Also, the interview they did with one of the family members, a young family member. I really didn't analyze his body language. That's, again, as police officers, that's what we look for. We look for deception, whether body language or verbally what is being said by that person. But that's real interesting that they're not reaching out to you. They want to share the story. They want to get it out. Yet here you are wanting to take the story seriously, and they're not reaching out to you at all. One of the big things is it was the meteor that was an amazing catch on that officer's body cam, having that meteor come over. Talk about timing, was just perfect. But again, everybody thought, oh, it was a UFO crash. It was all this. And it's like, no, just a meteor that they caught on the body cam. I would love to do more investigation on this case, and I would love to see if the officers would be willing to talk to us and that we can get a little bit more information, because that is an amazing story.
Yeah, well, I think that probably there are a couple of them that are listening tonight who may or may not reach out to you. I think that they were, look, I applaud them for taking it seriously. They got the report, which sounded pretty wild. If you've heard the original 911 call, we are the news organization that got all that body cam footage and made it public to the world. We got it. And Metro, to their credit, acknowledged that they had sent officers there. They acknowledged they sent officers again. They took it seriously. Until things got a little bit crazy, because some of the claims that were made by the family, and I don't think they're making it up, I just think they were confused. Some of the claims they made about this thing landing in the backyard and leaving indentations simply were not true. They were not true. And we showed that in our report that came later, especially after they three different times it said they talked to us, and all three times they wouldn't open the door. So that was that. I applaud those who want to look into it, and I will send you our information about it if you want to dig in further. I applaud Metro for taking it seriously to begin with, but I don't blame them for moving on, because things got pretty wacky after that.
Yeah. The video from, I think it was the dash cam of the meteorite falling, ironically, we forgot to mention, we're really good friends with Mark D'Antonio as well. We actually sent that video to him, and he kind of analyzed it and kind of confirmed as well that he thought it was a meteorite as well. So,
it was a meteorite. And if it landed, it would have been hundreds of miles away, but, not in Las Vegas, but I don't blame the people for making the report. The thing came over and they were startled, and then some other phenomena, and, it's not as cut and dried as a UFO world, I think, would like it to be. And I think the police came to that conclusion after a bit of investigation. What about, have you looked at some of the UK cases? There are police officers in the UK who've had their own experiences, created their own organizations, and then they put out a call for other law enforcement to come forward, and were overwhelmed with the number of calls and contacts and case information that were sent in to them. Does that ring a bell?
Not the UK. Okay. I have not heard. I would love to find that organization. It would be fantastic for us to get with them and join forces.
I'll send you
what's going on in the UK here in the States, and then maybe we can share stories with each other and help each other out if they're looking for a story here in the States. But I have not heard of that organization.
I'll send you some links to that. There's a couple of books that have been written based on purely on just police cases, police files and sightings and encounters. I'm happy to put you in touch with those folks, and we'll see where it leads. I know that you've talked to UFO groups, people like MUFON. And have you ever been invited to speak to law enforcement groups, Marianne?
Actually, yes. We were invited. We spoke with the podcast, the National Police Association, with Betsy Branner-Smith. That is the national organization of, with the police officers. And I thought to get that information to...
Hello?
They're taking it serious that... They thought it's such a interesting topic that there are law enforcement officers out there that do have stories. And Betsy allowed us to come onto her podcast explain what UAPPD is all about, and if there were any officers that would like to share stories to, you know, to contact us. Actually speaking at any type, whether it's the National Chiefs of Police Association or any other law enforcement, we haven't been invited to speak with anyone, but we would love that. We'd love to get the word out a little bit more about us.
Maybe we'll make contact with somebody and they'll reach out to you as a result of this program. Same kind of question for you, Dave, about your law enforcement colleagues about not being invited. I guess that's to be expected at this stage because you're still kind of a fledgling organization, right?
Yeah. It's still relatively new. In fact, there's only a handful of us that are really working with it. But we're trying to get more people involved and trying to gather more stories. And one of the things I just want to kind of touch on is a lot of the stories that we're getting, I know a lot of times, like you mentioned earlier about commending Las Vegas Metro for following up with the stories, and I 100% agree with you. The things to remember, though, is every time somebody sees something, whether it truly is something that is unexplained or maybe it's something that's mundane and we end up finding out what it is, there's still a trauma there that these people face. Whenever you see something that you don't understand, everybody has to deal with that trauma, whether it's a citizen or a first responder. And so a lot of times, I think a lot of officers don't want to come forward and talk, and like some of the reasons we may not have been invited yet is because it is still a subject that nobody likes talking about, things that they don't understand or something that causes them to feel uncomfortable. You have to be pretty sure of yourself to talk about something in this like genre. And I think that kind of is something that we've kind of hit a little bit of a road bump with, but we're working through it with different people by gaining that trust, kind of the way that you gain trust with people over all the years that you've been working. Yeah. And we're trying to lay that foundation so that we can get involved, because I would love for us to actually help establish some sort of policy or protocol for law enforcement to respond to, whether it's a sighting of a UAP or some sort of paranormal encounter or some sort of sighting of a cryptid. I think it would be great for organizations to have some sort of policy, something to do with it, someplace to record it, to keep track of it. Because right now we're just trying to gather as many stories as we can just so that they're somewhere, so that you get these officers that encounter something and they don't know who to talk to. They don't know where to turn. They're afraid of getting laughed at. They're afraid of a threat to their career. And we want them to know that there is a group like us out there where we will take them seriously. We will listen to their story, and we will not put them at jeopardy.
Dave and Marianne, I got to take a break here. UAPPD is the organization. Marianne and Dave, a lot of folks on the phones. We'll get to that in just a second. I wanted to mention one thing before we pick up the line and see what people have on their mind. It's about Skinwalker. So Skinwalker Ranch, I've been chasing that story for a long time. And I remember when I was first up there, among the first people I ever met at the ranch was a former police officer who had been called to the ranch while he was on active duty. Years later, he retired, of course, but he's telling me the story after he retired. He'd been there active duty on reports of UFOs over the property and also cattle mutilations. There had been other reports over the years, other police officers that I talked to on camera, and then some that are active duty now off camera that we talked to about weird stuff that happened. But when people went looking for the records, the reports, the things that should have been filed 30 years ago, there's nothing there. So they're able to say, aha, this is all made up. It didn't really happen. What happens to reports like that in general in law enforcement? Something that a small town police organization may not keep forever, but larger organizations, if there are sensitive files, weird reports about UFOs or related phenomena, what might happen to them in the police departments that you've worked with? Would they keep those? Would they shred them? Would they hide them as the military does, or what? Dave, what do you think?
A lot of times, any type of report like that, like we talked about earlier, would probably get filed as an unknown trouble. And any type of case like that will get purged eventually. After so many years, they'll just purge it. They'll just shred it. But a lot of these cases, before the officer will actually complete a report, he'll kind of have that moment where either he gets spoken to or something ends up happening and they end up deciding maybe it's not something that we need to file. And it's not an attempt to try and conceal it or anything like that, as much as it's an attempt to try and avoid the criticism and the stigma. But when we do file them, a lot of times, because it's not associated with a crime, so most of the reports that we file as a police officer are going to have something to do with some sort of criminal activity or something that affects somebody, like a car accident, something like that, stolen property, things where there are different organizations involved, be it an insurance company or a citizen who is out some sort of property, you get victims advocates involved, things like that. So those cases and those reports are kept longer because there is a reason for them to be kept longer. If we fill out something that we would call like a information-only report, or sometimes we refer to them as a FI card or a field interview card, a lot of those are only kept for a short period of time. And since there's no, as far as the police records are determined, there's no reason to keep them, they will eventually purge them. So depending on what each agency determines is how long they're going to keep those information-only reports, some of them could be purged within 5 to 10 years. Some of them they might keep longer, 20, 25 years. It kind of depends on the agency, but a lot of times that's what ends up happening because there's not like anybody to submit the citing to as a report. There's no like criminal follow-up investigation or anything going to court about it or anything like that.
Yeah, good point. We'll take some calls. First time caller, Natalia in Austin. Hi, you're on with Marianne and Dave.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind? Hello?
Hello?
You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I was working off duty at a Section 8.
Okay. Hey, Natalia, we're losing you here. All right. I'm sorry. There was a problem with your phone, so sorry we couldn't take that call. We're going to go east of the Rockies. Gary in Cleveland. Hi, Gary. You're on with Marianne and Dave of UAPPD.
Hello. Hello, George and guests. I just want to pass this on to you. You were referring to one of the most famous cases of that sort, the East Liberty, Ohio UFO chase. That, I believe, occurred in the 70s, like 76 or something, not the 60s. And it started in East Liberty, Ohio, and went all the way over the Pennsylvania border over the course of like 4 hours from one department to another. And it involved the investigator who broke the story, I believe, was out of Columbus. His name was Kenny something, and he appeared on Art Bell. So there is a tape someplace in the Art Bell Classics of that interview. He let him talk for like the full 4 hours, and they played the dispatcher tapes from that incident, going from one department to another. If you have your producers dig it out, it'll blow your mind. It should be one of the Art Bell classics of all time.
And yeah, that sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah, and it, as I believe that investigator, he didn't live very long after he was on Art Bell.
Wow.
And I had heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, but all the police staff that was involved with that case was fired. The only reason they got that tape out was because somebody saw to it that they made a copy of those tapes before it had a chance to be confiscated. So that's all I know about that. But if you have your producer look into that.
Will do, Gary. Thanks for the call. I've looked it up. This incident that I was referring to was April 17, April 18, 1966. So maybe there was another incident in the 70s, but thanks for calling. Appreciate it. West of the Rockies, Jeff in Culver City. Hi, Jeff. What's on your mind?
Hey, George, Marianne, Dave, and the Coast to Coast family. Yes, an officer's credibility means everything, and for some patrol officers on late-night shifts, especially in remote deserts, mountainous areas and wooded areas, it can be downright scary and frightening, you know, indeed. And that's just for criminals wandering around, you know. But Marianne is right to say that anonymity means everything when an officer, you know, does come forward with strange and unusual sightings of UFOs or UAPs or land-based monstrosities meandering amongst us because of the ridicule and judgmental harassment they may, you know, encounter later. My question to the guests is this, George. Have any officers' mental health been challenged in any personnel or human resources or internal affairs reviews regarding what they've seen while on patrol? And has any officer ever produced any proof of what they've seen in the skies or on land? And I'll take your answer off there.
Marianne, you want to tackle that?
Well, one, we don't know of anyone, at least I don't, and I don't know if Dave does, but that human resources has gotten involved, or, you know, an officer sees something, so the supervisors go, well, you're going to have a psych evaluation before you get back on the road. I have not heard about that, and the only cases that we have right now that actually, well, we've got a couple of them. The case of in Kienta, Arizona, with the first responders that had a UFO craft come over their where they were in their office. There were numerous witnesses. There were police dispatching calls and telling them what other people have seen about this craft. There was the one gal that was actually underneath that UFO. She came down with radiation poisoning for about 4 years. She was diagnosed with radiation poisoning. Luckily, over the last 4 or 5 years, she has, it's gotten out of her system. You know, thank goodness for that. Also, we have a couple of reports from an Indian reservation, some officers out there, and they actually had some documentation, some evidence of these paranormal experiences that they were having. So we would love for officers to share, like, the dispatch calls or maybe body cam of certain incidences where they have encountered a UFO or a cryptid or even a paranormal experience, and share that with us. We would love that if they just, you know, contact us on our website, uap-pd.com. We would love to talk to them and get their story.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Let me ask you this, Dave and Marianne. For a police officer, say you got body cam video, something interesting, could they make a copy of it and release it, even surreptitiously, no name attached, or would that be a violation of department policy?
Well, I think that would be a department policy violation, but the officer themselves, like, we have one case where an officer actually provided us with body cam footage from a paranormal case. And the case that I talked about, my incident at the beginning, I have video and audio evidence that was 100% proves our case. And yet when I got called into the office upstairs, they literally played all of the evidence for me and still accused me of lying. And so it's in answer to the caller's question. Yeah, we have people giving us videos and audio recordings and stuff, and people will still deny it. And it comes down to the question of credibility. It comes down to the question of trust. We're obviously, like the caller said, I think it was Jeff, that we, you know, the anonymity is paramount, and that's what we try to maintain. But we still run into that hang-up of literally video and audio evidence that they are using against the officer and saying, well, this is all made up. How do I know you didn't fake this? And it's like, well, because I have better things to do with my time than fake this.
Yeah. So, on the wild card line, Todd in Louisiana. Hi, Todd. What's on your mind?
For taking my call. So I've been a cop for about 15 years, and I just want to expand on that. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. If we do come out and say anything, our credibility is on the line, and then, you know, they might want to do a psychic eval eventually. But there has to be a safe space to funnel this information down. And the paranormal is relatively new territory. And I believe once we get deeper into it, that more officers will be able to come out and talk about their experiences when that trust has been established. I've experienced paranormal stuff while on patrol, and nothing that needed to be documented per se, but who do you go and talk to about that?
Like what? What happened to you on patrol? What did you see?
Well, it was after a storm, and I had to go in and clear a plantation in a plantation house, and you could just feel the dark energy around. It was horrendous. And you just keep that experience to yourself, because who are you going to talk to about that, like I said? And that was pretty much the only experience I've had. And it's not about what you think happened. It's about what you can prove at the end of the day. So officers are either going to take that risk to send the information in, or they're not. But I believe you will see an influx of that coming in once there is an established safe area to do so and send that.
That's a great story. Please reach out to our website and please provide that to us. We would love to talk to you about that. And you're 100% right. And that's what we're trying to do, is establish that safe zone. And you're 100% correct as well. It's not, you know, when it comes down to it, it's what you can prove. But that's in a court of law. As far as we're concerned, I trust you as an officer. Like Marianne said, we would be willing to take a bullet for you. We'll take this bullet for you, too. Call us and give us the story, because we want to give you guys a place to talk.
Todd, thanks so much for calling in. Really appreciate you sharing that with us. I hope you'll get in touch with UAPPD. We're going to go back to the first-time caller list, and hopefully that Natalia's phone is working. Natalia, are you there?
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me now?
I can, yeah.
Oh, good. Well, I was working an off-duty job at a Section 8 housing project in Austin, Texas. My partner was a former Army Ranger, and we were on foot patrol late at night. This lady, who had a reputation as a curandera, she came running to us and said, could you please do something about the screaming and the yelling and the hollering? Nobody in our end of the complex can sleep. So we went over there. And there were a couple of Austin regular on-duty police officers there. There was a DPS trooper there and a couple of Travis County sheriff's deputies there. They're all standing outside this apartment. The screaming was horrible. I mean, you could hear it all. Oh, it was just horrible. I mean, screaming and screaming and screaming. So we looked. We said, what's going on here? And all of us saw a toddler's hand pushing back the Venetian blinds, and the screaming continued, and the Austin cop said, I'm breaking the door. So he broke the door, and when he did, there was nothing in there, nobody, all quiet, nobody, no furniture, no nothing. So that morning, we told the property manager, we found out that a toddler had been beaten to death by this woman's boyfriend, and he put her in the ICU. And the property manager promptly got a Catholic father, and they exorcised the apartment, and we never heard another paranormal incident there again.
Wow, that's a heck of a story. Did you make a report? Was anything officially filed?
I don't know what the Austin police did. I don't know what the DPS or the Travis County deputies did. All I know is I wrote up that we handled a disturbance, a loud noise disturbance. I wrote it up as that.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
Everybody said, well, maybe we better not, you know. Talk about the screaming, but it was just a disturbance. And when we went to check it out, it was all quiet. So that's how I handled it. And I've been in law enforcement and executive protection for 26 years. So, but I never told anybody about what happened, because like the other officer said, your credibility is on the line, and you really don't want to get a reputation for being a nut job, you know?
Yeah. Natalia, I'm so glad you called back. That's a great story. You made the hair on my arms go up a little bit. Dave, Marianne, you want to react? We got about a minute left.
Okay, real quick. Thank you, Talia, for calling in. We would love to talk to you again. If you would anybody out there, but if you would get on uap-pd.com, send us your information. I would love to talk to you. As a matter of fact, real quick, a police officer on the Indian reservation, they had the body cam footage of the call that he was on, had exactly like you had, screaming from inside the house. They kick the door in. They go in. There's absolutely nothing. But there was a lady that lived there that was being haunted by spirits for many, many months until she, you know, and then she finally moved out. She couldn't stay in that house any longer. But that's exactly what an officer, we do have one story like that, but I would love to hear your story. And if you're willing to share it with us, that'd be great.
Thanks again for calling, Natalia. And Marianne, Rob, and Dave, I can't thank you enough for being here. I hope we'll stay in touch. I'll send you some links to some cases that I have and information and reports that we've done that maybe you want to pursue them a little bit further. And I hope you'll stay in touch with us as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for having us on tonight.
Absolutely. UAPPD is a great idea, and I appreciate both of you being here. We're going to continue our conversation into weird stuff. Coming up next, Matt Vaughn, My Cosmic Trigger, High Strangeness in Theory and Practice. So those of you who are on the phones and had some comments and stories about UFOs, stick around, because we might get back to your calls a little bit later in our conversation. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM.